Hey, kids, you're listening to A Couple of Annoyed Grunt Boys, and this is the 138th Simpsons Podcast.
Memories press between the pages of my mind. Memories speeding through the ages just like wine.
That's right, this is the Simpsons Podcast that discusses the beloved animated sitcom The Simpsons from seasons 11 and beyond and the new episodes when they air. Why do we do it that way? Well, you see, there was an entity known as the Wheel of Random that cursed us to watch only episodes at random from 11 and beyond. Because there's plenty of other podcasts out there that have discussed the glory age of The Simpsons, that being seasons 1 through 10, so we are tasked to review the later seasons to see if there's gems out there that can rival that first decade of episodes. But I don't do this alone. No, I'm just an annoyed grunt boy, Craig. With me, as always, is the other annoyed grunt boy,
Steve. Hey, Craig.
Hey, Steve. This is a tough time for us on the podcast. Something major happened to this podcast this past weekend, and we don't know if we want to continue going on with this, but as you can hear, it's just myself, Craig, and Steve.
Yeah.
You're wondering where the other annoyed grunt boy is. The third annoyed grunt boy, Mr. Pubert Van Winkershart, the third annoyed grunt boy, but really he was kind of the first. He passed away, so the annoyed grunt boys are no longer a trio. We're, I guess, a duo now.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can continue going on doing this podcast without Pubert. He was he was the rock of this podcast. I mean, I'm going to try not to cry here, but I mean, it's tough doing this without him. He's was the most instrumental part, I think, of this podcast. He hated Scorpion's Tale so much that anytime we brought up a Scorpion's Tale, he played this hit. Rock
you like a hurricane. You know, week after week, Craig and I would argue with him about, you know, having a big political debate in the middle of the episode. You know, we'll take a hot button issue. We can just work it out. But he understood what was important. And he's like, no, this is not a political podcast.
He came up with the great theory that, you know, maybe the future Martin Prince and Nelson Muntz, you know, might be an item. I don't know. I mean, that was his genius.
He's so smart, Pubert.
I know fans out there pretty much would listen to this podcast because of good old Pubes, as we called him.
Yeah.
I just hope you guys stick around and just listen to us, you know, the duo here. We're going to continue doing it without Pubert.
And we don't do it out of disrespect. We do it to honor Pubert.
He would want us to continue this podcast. Yeah. I think to honor his legacy, we should have a toast to good old third annoyed grump boy Pubert.
Yeah, that toast will remember Pubert and will bring us to our favorite segment, the Simpsons Cocktail Corner. Afternoon delight, cocktails and moonlit nights, that dreamy look in your eye, give me a tropical contact.
Oh, Steve, we got to get back to the podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, this episode, Steve, I think we should incorporate objects from this episode into a drink, Steve.
Yeah.
You made a cocktail for us.
That's right.
Is it a based off of this episode? Something from this episode inspired you to make this cocktail?
Indeed, actually. A couple of things inspired me for this one.
Do tell.
Okay, so my drink is called the Spare No One, named after Homer's ball, the bowling ball. And so in this episode, Kent Rockman talks about drowning his woes with a brand new bottle of scotch. And well, I got a brand new bottle of scotch for Christmas, so I thought I'd use that. Also, this episode is kind of, I don't want to spoil anything, but there is a lot happening. It's kind of an amalgamation of many stories intertwining. So I thought I'd take inspiration from several cocktails. So what I have is a scotch-based cocktail that I used Glenlivet 14-year-old cognac barrel-aged to get that nice cognac flavor. And then I used half an ounce of Luxardo cherry liquor, kind of to emblemize the drink Blood and Sand, which is scotch and cherry. Some soda water, and then some ginger and honey to remind you of penicillin, which is another famous scotch cocktail. And I even found a cocktail called Bowling from the Absolute.com website, which has maraschino liquor, scotch, and vodka, but I don't want to put vodka in there. So yeah, so mine is scotch, cherry liqueur, soda water, ginger, honey, Amaro bitters, and Luxardo cherry, and some ice. And so it's just kind of a thing I threw together with what I had in the house, but I think it could be good. It might be good. I'm going to give it a taste. Oh, that's a nice drink. Might cut back down on the soda water a little bit, but the honey and the ginger really play well together.
Cut down on that soda water, that non-alcoholic.
Yeah, it's just getting in the way. But the cherry and the ginger like really mesh well, and the bitterness of the bitters and the scotch, the potency of the scotch kind of play well with that. So I think it's a pretty okay drink.
Yeah, yours sounds very luxurious.
I try.
It looks like something that would cost you $24 on a menu at a bar.
It'd take about 14 hours to make.
Yeah, there's a lot of work into it. All right. Well, hey, cheers to you. Ding. That's the cheers.
Cheers.
All right. Mine's not as complex as yours, I don't think. We're going with, in this episode, Kent Brockman has a little flashback to the Springfield Peach Parade.
Oh.
Grand Marshal of a racist golfer, Fuzzy Zoller. Stay tuned to find out why he was racist, if you don't know. So I think I'm going to call this the Fuzzy Zoller.
Okay.
It could be the peach drink, but, you know, the Fuzzy Zoller sounds good because there's a fuzzy navel, right?
Right.
So this is a Fuzzy Zoller, and it's a combination of alcohol that, you know, they should get along together and not be alcohol racists.
There you go.
Like Unity. Fuzzy Zoller. Unity, right. So I'm starting off with a little bit of a triple sec here. I just put a little ounce of that in there. Then we got a nice ounce of tequila, and then an ounce of spiced rum. Then, of course, with the peach there, we get an ounce of peach Bellini.
Ooh.
And then we get to dash a little sea salt, some dash of key lime juice. And to garnish, we got zest of a mandarin, along with a mandarin peel, and a nice little mandarin on top. As you can tell, I had mandarins in the house.
Sure.
Let's give this a little treat. I mean, I kind of feel like I know where this is going with lime juice and a little bit of tequila. Like, I'm probably going to get a nice, maybe a little margarita-esque feel to it. With the salt,
yeah, it sounds really tasty.
Let's find out. All right, so that peach Bellini really does come through, and I taste the predominant of the peach, which is good because I wanted this to be a peach-based drink, and wow, this...
That sounds really good.
This is a tropical delight. I just got a nice little sip of the rum there, and I think the rum and the tequila really, really go well together in this one.
They do partner well, you know.
Yes, and I think that dash of sea salt, too, really helps. I could have rimmed it with salt, but, you know, I'm not really getting much of the mandarin, by the way, but I'm going to squeeze a little bit of that juice in there. But, yeah, hey, that's a good drink. I recommend making that one, too.
Yeah, two very good drinks, I feel.
Do we put the recipes on our social medias when we... Because we've only done the cocktail corner once.
I think we did.
All right, so Steve will put up the recipes on the social media, so give them a go. And I forgot to mention... it was shaken with ice, but also poured it in a glass with ice. So
nice.
I think if you don't have the mandarin, I don't think it's necessary. An orange probably do better. An orange peel, that zest. Can't get much of a zest from those little mandarins. So
yeah, mandarins are tough to zest.
I think a cherry on top would be pretty good. So if you had a maraschino cherry, I would definitely do that. And maybe add a little bit more dash of salt. That's all.
Always more salt, I think.
Yeah. Nothing like a nice tropical summer drink in the middle of winter. Sorry, let's continue this stupid bit. A toast to the third annoyed grunt boy. What was his name again?
Pubert.
Pubert, yeah. Cheers.
May your life live on, much like your love of...
The Simpsons.
The Simpsons, yeah.
All right, Steve. Hey, it's just us now on this dumb podcast. Let's just get into it, Steve. Let's go back in time to when this episode aired, which, of course, was the year 2013. Wow. Originally November 3rd, Steve. Get us in the mindset, Steve. What was the number one movie of that weekend?
Well, we were loving this dystopian Mormon propaganda, maybe? I don't know. Ender's Game was the number one movie in the box office that week.
With Indiana Jones himself?
That's right.
And Sir Ben Kingsley, I think, was in it. He had a young Haley Seinfeld. Steinfeld. Viola Davis. Asa Butterfield was the star of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I never saw the movie or read the books. So
me neither. I think I don't know much about them.
I heard the books are good.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Orson Scott Card. But the movie, I guess, wasn't well received, right?
I don't think so, no. So yeah, in the book, the main character's father is Catholic and his mother is Mormon, just like me.
Are you Bender himself?
I could be. I know you're the end too soon.
Wait, I think you're Bender from Futurama because you drink a lot, you tell people to bite your shiny metal ass.
And I am kind of a robot.
And you smoke cigars and you just want to open your own casino with blackjack and hookers, right?
That's me. bite my shiny metal ass. Craig, well, while you were biting my shiny metal ass, what were we listening to?
I think this was the hit of 2013, wasn't it?
I would say so.
I love this tune. It's by Lord. It's Royals.
And we'll never be royals. Royals. It's the one in our blood. That kind of love's just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be your ruler. Ruler.
Great song.
Yeah. Lord.
Oh, Lord.
I have nothing negative or nothing else to say about that song. So there we go.
Nope. We reviewed it as good, and that's all we got.
Yeah. Well, but we have more to give, and that's more about Simpsons giving.
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, we're talking about seasons 25, episode 3, 4, Regrettings, and a Funeral, which it's following the death of a friend, Homer, Marge, Kent Brockman, and Mr. Burns address the biggest regrets of their life so far. This sounds like a fun watch, and we're going to do that and come back and discuss. So, hey, go make a couple cocktails that your annoyed grunt boys made and pour one out for good old Pubert.
Yeah, this one's for you, Pubert.
And we'll be right back.
Gold teeth, gray goose, dripping in the bathroom, blood stains, ball gowns, trash in the hotel room, we don't care.
And we are back. Today we're talking about Four Regrettings and a Funeral. It's the third episode of the 25th season, originally aired November 3rd, 2013. It's episode 533 in the show's run. The nerd code is RABF18. Written by Mark Wilmore. Directed by Mark Kirkland. And your showrunner is Al Jean.
Mark Wilmore is no longer with us, sadly. He passed away in 2021. He's the younger brother of comedian Larry Wilmore. And he has quite a prolific writing career, writing for In Living Color, The PJs, The Simpsons, and F is for Family, the Bill Burr cartoon. Speaking of Bill Burr, we'll get to him in a moment, or Bill Burr Baggins. He's written about 10 episodes of The Simpsons. We've only reviewed one other one, Midnight RX or Midnight Prescription. Our sixth episode, which is probably not very good, in which they go to Canada to smuggle drugs with Ned Flanders. But yeah, he passed away at the age of 57, battling COVID-19 and other conditions that have caused him pain for most of his life.
When you said Midnight RX was a bad episode, not a bad Simpsons episode, a bad episode of ours.
Correct. Yeah. I think that we were probably not very good at that time.
Our sixth go around, and way to make it about us instead of talking about Mark.
Yeah.
RIP, Mark. The pandemic was real, and even in 2021, when he passed away, we were, we had vaccines and stuff like that, but, there's other underlying conditions, as everyone knows, so it's, I don't know what to say, Steve. A lot of death talk in this episode.
It is a lot of death talk in this episode.
I mean, not just our former annoyed grunt boy, but also with Mark, and then a character coming up, and then the end of the episode, too. You notice getting older, that's just you start looking back, and then what's there to look forward to? Because the only thing that's we can look forward to now at our age is a sweet sigh of relief.
Yeah, that big knock on the door, and oh, look, it's Mr. Death ready to take you away. But all you can do now is celebrate the present, because they call it a present for a reason.
It's a gift.
That's right.
Well, Steve, much like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, death is your gift.
Oh, thanks so much. And my gift to you is a title gag.
Oh, thanks.
In which Radioactive Man and Fallout Boy, the person, not the band, soar across the screen.
Did Fallout Boy ever cover the Simpsons theme song?
I gotta assume they did at some point.
I think I remember they covered the Ray Parker Jr. classic / Huey Lewis ripoff song, Ghostbusters, for the 2016 Ghostbusters Answer the Call reboot remake film that starred Kate McKinnon, Leslie Jones, the rest.
Sure.
Have you heard of that movie, Ghostbusters Answer the Call, 2016?
I do think I have
heard
of that.
Well, we'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
So did Huey Lewis then sue Fall Out Boy for covering the Ghostbusters?
Yeah, this time Ray Parker Jr. and Huey Lewis teamed up.
Hey, We have a billboard gag, Steve.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we haven't talked about billboard gags in a long time, but Apu is holding a carton of milk, and the text says, one more hour until milk expires. Thank you, daylight savings. I had a question.
Yeah.
Remember like a year or two ago when they passed the daylight savings time thing? Like, does that come into effect this year?
I think it does, but I don't know when. Like, I don't know if...
So usually in March, we spring forward, right?
Right. So I think we're going to spring forward one more time.
And that's it.
I think so.
In this year, 2023.
Yeah.
We spring forward in that March, and that's it. We're done.
We're done.
Arizona's like, yeah, dude, we haven't had that, so we don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like one city in Indiana.
Indiana? I hardly know her.
Hey-o. I don't know how to transition from that, but we got a chalkboard gag.
Oh, boy.
It's Bart, sadly only writing one line, which reads, "We'll really miss you, Mrs. K." And that's because a week before this episode aired, Marsha Wallace, who voiced Edna Krabappel for 25 years, passed away. And so this is a tribute to her. It's just one line, very sad. And yeah, Mrs. Krabappel and all the people that Marsha Wallace would voice, you know, big part of the show. And it's sad.
You know how every time we have chalkboard gags, I kind of predict what Bart did. God. So does that mean Bart killed Edna Krabappel? You know what's so funny? It's not funny, but you know what's... He's sad and it's a very somber moment. I'm just making a dumb joke. But as soon as like the bell rings and he skateboards out, he's got a big smile on his face. Because
yeah, he's like, yay!
Misses her for 1 second. Yay.
Yeah, school's over. I'm done.
They could have just like animated, maybe just like a little thing of like him like walking out with his head down, holding a skateboard because he's still sad about the passing of Krabappel. But well, no,
probably didn't want to cut into this very short couch gag.
Well, Steve, do you have 3 hours?
As long as it's for something interesting, sure.
Because I'm going to go over this couch gag because it's a reference to J.R.R. Tolkien's work of fiction, The Lord of the Rings.
Wait, that was a fictional story?
It depends on who you ask.
Okay.
I'll describe everything in detail, like what it's referenced to, what book, because there's some Lord of the Rings, there's some Hobbit type references, but I think it's pretty interesting here, right? So an ancient map, we see the city of Springfield followed by a Shelbyville. You know, you got this nice music going around, very similar to the Howard Shore score from the Hobbit and Lord of the Rings movies. You know, you also see that beloved lemon tree there on the map. And then to the north is the land of the chocolate, then Critter Country, then Funky Town, then LAX self-parking, which is a funny joke. Then we traverse to the James L. Brook, which I think is a very funny joke.
Mm-hmm.
And finally see our destination, the comfy couch. So the Simpsons family, all dressed as characters. You know, we got Marge there looking like Gandalf the Grey. Mm-hmm. She's got the robes on. Homer is looking like a dwarf. So any dwarf, I guess. The Homer dwarf.
Mm-hmm.
But then the kids are all little hobbits there. You could tell by their feet, their little hair. You got Bart and Lisa and Maggie, all hobbits. And then even Grandpa kind of looks like a hobbit himself. So they leave. Looks like they're leaving Bag End there. The Shire, Hobbiton, whatever you call it. And they travel through the woods, you know, enduring rain, walking up a snowy mountain. You know, all those movies are just walking. So that's what they're doing. They're just walking. And then we see Mo there. Looks like he's Gollum, right? Or Smeagol. And then all of a sudden there's a female Smeagol who, you know, looks pretty good for a Gollum lady.
Yeah, it's pretty fit.
But she complains because she's like, there's not going to be sex without a ring. And then Smeagol puts the one ring on her and then she disappears. Very funny joke, I think, for nerd fans out there like the Lord of the Rings.
I get that reference.
Oh, good. Then they meet some beer drinking trolls. It's portrayed by Lenny, Carl, and Barney. This is a reference to the trolls and the hobbits. And when the sun rises, they turn to stone. And unfortunately, Barney crumbles over and dies. So the journey continues on. Did you need to get up and go pee for intermission, Steve?
Yeah, I might need to take a walk.
And the Simpsons cross a river. And then they brave Arctic conditions. They pass an elf hotel that doesn't allow dwarves, nor the Irish. Those elves are pretty racist.
Yeah.
And then they go through the dragon, Smaug's lair, and witness all of his riches. And Homer goes to grab some for himself, but the dragon would not allow it. And then the heroes then meet the ghosts of soldiers of Jimbo, Dolph, Curdy, and Marge. This must be the reference to the ghosts in the Return of the King. So then Marge uses her staff to zap them. Finally, they arrive at their destination, Steve, in the living room of 742 Evergreen Terrace, where then Homer just lies on the couch, leaving no room for the rest of his family. So, Steve, that whole couch gag was a minute and 38 seconds and 4 hours of me explaining it.
That was a good nap.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to take a sip of water.
Yeah. No, I think it was a fun adaptation of the Hobbit story. I mean, what I know of it, it seemed to cover it pretty well. And I was entertained for that minute, 38 seconds. So good job on you, The Simpsons.
Yeah, you don't need to watch any of the movies or read any of the books. You got the story, right?
I wish they would do that for all movies.
Or all books, into a couch gag.
Yeah, yeah. All books. Like Mein Kampf. Just make it a couch gag.
Oh, no. I think Al Jean's listening. He's like, that's a good idea.
Oh, no. And, you know, given the state of the country, not a political podcast, some people would be like, hey, that's a good idea. Anyway, our episode finally begins, as it always does, at the funeral of Springfield's most beloved character that you never saw, Chip Davis.
Oh, no.
Next to the deceased casket is a board that reads, Chip Davis, beloved father, husband, town meeting attendee, Duffman from 1992 and 19 through 1996 and in 2008, proofreader for Springfield Sign, Sideshow Chip, and Dome Shards Removal Supervisor. Of course, a reference to the Simpsons movie where they have the dome.
I love how there is the 92 to 96, like that run there. But then, you know, regular Duffman left for a few years. And then just in 2008, they brought him back.
Yeah.
Anyways, Marge reflects on how big of a role Chip played in everyone's lives. Homer remembers how people call Chip the sixth Simpson for some reason. And then Hans Molman is grateful for Chip's help with his biography entitled Magnificent Bastard, The Lives and Loves of Hans Molman. And it's got a picture of Hans there riding on his hog. And then, like, this proud black woman rides behind him, holding her fist in the air. Even Bumblebee Man was affected by Chip Davis, who helped the Spanish-speaking TV star deal with the loss of his parents, who were unfortunately killed playing paintball.
Every day, another person dies from paintball.
Only in America, Steve.
That's right.
In this clip, Reverend Lovejoy begins his eulogy.
Chip was the life of Sector 6F at the nuclear plant, but Chip once confessed to me he did have a few regrets. Chip regretted never ascending Mount Springfield from the south face. He regretted that the high school long jump record he set was wind-aided. He often spoke of that asterisk. He never broke par on hole 17 at Springfield Mini Golf. Let us pray.
Everyone has regrets. Not me. You. Your marriage is a dead fish floating in a tank of stale beer. Your baby's addicted to pacifiers. And your son is out of control.
I like how Maggie's sucking on the Bible, which is a nice commentary how the Bible sucks, man.
Yeah, dude. I also like that the Duff family is there. You got Duff Ultra, Duff Dry, and Duff Jr. The beer for kids.
I wish we had beer for kids.
I mean,
when we were kids, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now you just can give it to kids and call it beer.
I call it parenting.
That's right. I call it getting one moment of goddamn quiet.
All right. So Bart then yanks on several ropes, pulling up the pew kneelers. Is that what they're called, Steve? Pew kneelers?
That's what I could find. Yeah. Because okay. It took me far too long to understand the prank. I don't know if I'm just a dummy, but I did not get what he did.
Because you're supposed to pray on those little pew kneelers so you don't get your knees hurt. Those are nice little padded.
Yeah.
And so when he pulled them away, everyone just bashed their knees on the hard floor.
Do you think that was what the church really invented the things for, though? Because, I mean, they clearly wanted some reason for somebody to get on their knees and be comfortable.
Yeah, no, it's for blowjobs.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah. Wondering. Okay, go on.
Yeah, because those priests are not sexual deviants at all, Steve.
Not at all. Not but if they are, they're considerate ones because they have those knee protectors.
Again, not a religious podcast.
That's right.
But do you think Pope Benedict is hanging out in hell with the devil because of all the pedophiles he just, you know, ignored in his church?
I would assume so, yeah.
And his time as a Hitler youth.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to insult you Catholics out there, but that Pope Benedict, he looked evil.
He did. He looked like Darth Sidious.
Yeah, yeah. He looked like the Emperor.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's back to the Simpsons. So they all hurt their knees. Even Joe Namath was there. For some reason, he wears a suit with his name on the back.
Yeah.
And he's like, 40 years of healing gone. Does that mean Namath was like ready to go back into the game and play?
Yeah, him and Brett Favre were going to join forces.
Now just Joe Namath just going around telling people to fix their car if it's the vapor lock, right? It's probably vapor
That's lock. Right. Vapor lock.
Anyways, Bart laughs and Marge calls him such a Dickens or little Dickens. He admits that Dickens was pretty well behaved. How does she know if Charles Dickens was well behaved?
I don't don't know.
Patty says that Bart has been screwed up ever since Homer's DNA staggered into Marge's womb. You know, Marge has no regrets and feels that her first pregnancy was perfect. You know, she didn't smoke, she didn't drink, she even lost 3 pounds. Wow. Does that mean she smoked and drank during Lisa and Maggie's? Because she's like, I didn't do that then.
Maybe, yeah.
So the thing is, you know, if you're pregnant, smoke and drink because you'll have a Maggie or a Lisa.
I like to think that I have the morals of Lisa, but not the brains. And that's because my mom smoked, but my dad drank. Daddy's on the drink again.
You know, every night before bed, Homer would even give her a little kiss. Music.
Oh.
Yeah. So could Bart be messed up because of the music from the demon, the star child, the spaceman, and the kitty cat? Meow.
Marge flashes back to when she was pregnant, listening to Kiss's Detroit Rock City from their 1976 album, Destroyer. Sounds so heavy. Homer steps in, dressed head to toe in makeshift Gene Simmons outfit, complete with makeup. He sings along with Marge, sticking his long tongue out. Unfortunately for Homer, and for Marge, that tongue wasn't real. It was just not a strap-on, but...
A suck-on.
A suck-on, there it is.
Yeah.
Homer finds Marge's yearning to be odd, and in the present day, Kent Brockman reflects back on his own life.
Man, this is the weirdest pregnancy craving ever.
Well, for some reason, it relaxes me. Now do that thing Gene Simmons does.
Overstay my welcome for 40 years?
Regrets, eh? This local newsman's had a few, covering a town of backwater rubes who for some reason hate my guts. This is Kent Brockman, live at the Springfield Peach Parade. Sir, could you give us 8 seconds of your homespun wisdom?
It's a little known fact that you can get head lice from peaches. This is my daughter, Peaches.
We'll have more regrets at 11 tonight following an all-new bottle of scotch.
Kent Brockman.
So relatable.
Hey, Steve, did you notice who the Grand Marshal of the parade was?
I sure did. It's racist golfer Fuzzy Zoeller. So at the 1997, now problematically named, Masters Tournament.
So it should be called Primary Tournament, right?
Yeah, the Primaries Tournament.
Okay.
But Zoeller made remarks regarding Tiger Woods, saying that he's doing quite well, pretty impressive. That little boy is driving well and he's putting well. He's doing everything it takes to win. So you know what you guys do when he gets in there? You pat him on the back and say congratulations and enjoy it and tell him not to serve fried chicken next year. Zoeller then smiled, snapped his fingers and walked away before turning and adding, or collard greens or whatever the hell they serve.
Jesus. Ugh. It's like, let me say one thing that's racist, but oh wait, I want to say more racist things real quick.
Let's just double down on that. This caused Kmart and Dunlop to stop their sponsorship of Zoeller after the incident. So, yeah, I don't know how he got to be Grand Marshal of the Peach Parade, but
maybe that's
job, Springfield.
You know what's easy to do, Steve?
What's that, Craig?
Not be racist.
It's harder to be racist, honestly. treat people like people. It's pretty easy.
It's like, I'm going to make a comment that might offend someone's race or gender. I better not say that or... I might screw myself over. Just, you know,
yeah.
Remember that, kids.
It's easier to love than it is to hate.
Anyways, you Irish Mick, what's next?
Well, you dumb Italian. Homer thinks to him that Kent's regrets are nothing compared to his own, as he's made the worst financial decision of all time. He tries to avoid thinking about it, but it's no use. He flashes back all the way to early 2001, before 9/11, to bowling supply store Ally McBall's, which is a good name. Homer's impressed by the latest in ball fashion, from marble balls to one with a disco ball inside, and even a winking eyeball bowling ball. But then Homer sees the Ball de Resistance, which features a flaming skull that is shaped like a bowling pin with the words "Spare No One" written underneath. Homer calls up Bear Stearns, my favorite shock rock DJ, co-host is Baba Boo Boo. Too
dumb. You're so proud of yourself.
I know, and I hate it. Anyway. So Homer calls up Bear Stearns to sell one of his Apple stocks so he can buy the coolest bowling ball he's ever seen. The investment bank questions Homer, but he thinks he has a sense of the future. And meanwhile, back in the church, Homer finds that his reality isn't what he expected.
Oh, yeah. What is it?
Let's find out.
Okay.
You heard me. Technology is a fad. Heavy blue balls are the future.
Now let us text on our ubiquitous Apple tablets and phones.
Oh, you cost me a piece of all that. Oh, don't cry.
If it makes you feel worse, I am the man who bought the stock you sold.
Oh, but a rich man like you has no regrets at all.
Just one. The girl that got away. She broke my first heart.
So is there truly anyone among us without regrets?
I have no regrets.
Really, Mother?
No, I didn't see you there.
I know it's dumb, and we poo-poo or put down certain things, like, for instance, if an inanimate object all of a sudden has human characteristics, like the bowling ball there started crying. I actually kind of thought it was funny. It was very dumb, but I laughed. I chuckled.
I completely agree. It is dumb, but it is also very funny.
And Agnes there at the end, like, oh, yeah. I didn't know you were there. That was great, too. So, wow, this whole episode, it's going to be about regrets. I guess we got to get into it, Steve. What are your regrets, and why is it this podcast?
Oh, boy, I have so many. It's so hard to count all of them. This podcast is probably the biggest one. I mean, could have saved that kid in the well. I could have saved those children from that flaming orphanage.
Just remember in 1997, you were a cab driver in France, and you could have picked up Di, but you said, I'll let someone else drive her.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Princess Di, yeah.
And me and Mark Wahlberg were going to catch a flight in September of some year.
Jesus.
And he was like, hey, let's get a burger instead. And so I'm responsible for Wahlburgers because, like, hey, man, you and your brother should start your own thing. Oh. Yeah.
I remember I was at work November 22nd, and I was like, you know what? The president's in town. I'm going to take some time off at my job at the book depository here in Dallas, Texas, to see President Kennedy. And, well, look what happened there, Steve. If I wasn't at my shift, Kennedy would still be alive and president.
That's right.
Any other regrets here?
Well, I was working security 2 Januaries ago, the Capitol. And I was like, I'm going to take a break. It's a quiet day. Nothing's happening. And then I assumed that it was a quiet day. I didn't see my partner after that, though.
Oh, yeah. I remember that because I called you. Hey, I'm coming to see you at work for unrelated businesses.
Right. Asking about a laptop or something. I don't know.
But regrets, kids, right?
Yeah, no regrets.
Hashtag
YOLO. In this episode, they have already mentioned Apple several times, which is a little peculiar because normally in the Simpsons universe, it's referred to as Mapple, and they have MyPods, MyPhones, and their founder is Steve Mobs, which after a while just feels lazy. But this episode uses a real name for the company and its products. And I don't know exactly why, but it feels a little bit, as we'll see later on, that they wanted to get paid for it and didn't.
All right.
Just interesting.
We all love our Mapple phones, Steve.
We do love our Mapple phones.
You got
if they want to sponsor this podcast, feel free.
I think I have a stock in Apple, don't I? I might.
I might as well.
But of course, I bought it when, you know, it was expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think it's probably like not worth anything. Let me look right now. That's a fun game, right?
Yeah. Let's take a look. I have
my stocks here. Dun, 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 dun. I'm going to put up my app, the Will Scarlet app. Dumb joke. I'm down. Yeah. I'm in the red, Steve, on my Apple stocks. I'm in the red at all my stocks.
Oh, no. Well, the economy's not doing great, but...
What? My Tesla? Why didn't anyone tell me?
No.
Oh, no. Mine's not for Apple. It's for an Apple. Like, there's just one Apple that's in the stock market that they just keep. It's a red delicious, and no one wants it. So that's why it keeps going down.
That's a mistake. I told you way back in October, invest in pumpkins. It's evergreen.
I see them peeking around late October, mid-November. What was his line? I forget. Anyways, outside the church, Bart steps out and about twice as tall, wearing the priest vestments and holding 2 tithing collection baskets. In an Irish accent, he states that he's Father O'Grady and he's looking for dimes for the needy. Milhouse giggles below Bart, causing Luann to ask if his son is a bottom. I mean, or half of that mischief, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Then Milhouse pokes his large bulbous nose out, you know, which is located groin area on an average person, and it looks back and forth. And probably one of the very funniest scenes that Jasper assumes that his schnoz is a schlong, and his beard like flies over his face. It goes up over his face. And much
is that
like...
to imply that he got an erection?
Uh-oh. I guess so.
Okay.
And so much like many, many priests before him, Bart states that my pants, like the Lord, work in mysterious ways. God, what a very funny scene.
A lot of fun.
I know it's crass and blue collar, but like using Milhouse's nose as a hog. Steve, let's get that tattooed on our bodies.
Alrighty. I like it. What if we got Milhouse's face, but instead of a nose, it was my penis. So like around my crotch, I'll get Milhouse. I'll dye my pubes blue all the time. And then I'll put some glasses on there. It'll be good.
Steve, I don't think we need to continue this joke
anymore. Okay.
Let's just continue.
Timothy Lovejoy appears in his underpants, demanding that Bart return those vestments. Monty remarks that, speaking of return on investments, his Apple stock is up 3,500%. Homer's annoyed by Mr. Burns' intentional mishearing, while Bart and Milhouse sword fight using those collection trays, denying Ned the ability to tithe. Marge looks on, trying to find a way to blame herself. We then flashback again to when she was pregnant with Bart.
Woo, woo, woo. That's how you do dream sequences, Steve.
Do, 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 do.
All right, so Homer reads through the completely new and revised What to Expect When You're Expecting when he sees that Marge needs lumbar support. So he thinks that, of course, is lumbar. He needs to go to the lumber yard. But Marge reminds him that lumbar means lower back and wonders how many times Homer will make the same stupid mistake by pointing out several planks of wood that Homer has previously brought home. So at Marge's request, Homer puts on Kiss's love gun and then throws the self-help guide into the fireplace, asking, let's try a season one, Homer.
Hey, Book, are you expecting this?
That's great.
Thanks. He continues to throw dumb, helpful books into the flames, including titles such as
The First 12 Months,
How to Talk So Kids Will Listen,
Infant CPR,
How to Pay for College.
As Homer proudly reflects on the good fire he made, we jump back to the modern day church parking lot, where Bart and Milhouse are still fencing with the collection baskets, now with each boy on top of a car. Milhouse's vehicle drives off, and Monty Burns looks on at the reckless youth. But he wasn't referring to Milhouse, he was talking about old Jewish man who uses a walker with tennis balls on it to slowly saunter by. Monty once again had a spring in a step like that. He then remembers when he was in France, kind of looking like Timothée Chalamet, reading on how to survive in Paris on $1,000 a day. It was there that he met Lila, who ran a crepe shop. As Monty paints Lila in the nude, she comments that she could lie in this unheated garret forever. Burns states that there is heat, but he just chooses not to turn it on. Seeing Lila in that sweet light between the wars, Monty has a question for Lila. He then reaches into a pocket and pulls out.
We got a tarantula.
We've got a cat's skull.
A monkey's paw, you know, possibly the same one from Treehouse of Horror 2.
A vial of bubbling, mysterious liquid.
A box with a demon inside.
And finally, a box with a large diamond engagement ring, which symbolizes the big step of Lila going from cousin to wife. Lila agrees, but on one condition.
Oh, Monty, you must promise me one thing.
Anything she wanted, I was willing to do. Anything except...
All I ask is that you set aside 5 minutes a day to think of others.
When you say others, could they be bars of gold?
I shall find another husband as good as you are evil.
No one's that good.
The young Burns looks like a young, or I guess current age, Timothée Chalamet, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think he looks more like Jeremy Allen White, star of TV's FX's The Bear.
I could see that, yeah.
You know, we talk about casting live action all the time. Let's say that for him. You know, not bad.
Yeah.
Timothée Chalamet will be Bart.
I can see that.
All right. Well, Monty has left his drawing, which is just a crude stick figure drawing of a large, very large breasted woman lying on a couch. Mr. Burns can kind of draw perfect circles there. I'm just staring at the picture right now. Not staring. I'm studying.
Sure. Studying.
Oh, boy. Naked lady line drawings.
Mm.
Hubba hubba.
Woohoo.
But it looks like you got the fingers right. It looks like there's a thumb and three fingers on one hand. Okay.
Hands are the hardest to draw, so good job.
Yeah, good job. So Monty thought it looked better in his memory, of course, but vows to find Lila and win her back, using his like drawing book to remember his old crew, such as Hemingway, and then drawn in the same like stick figure style, holding a fishing rod and a large fish. And then, of course, his friend Picasso, which is, of course, is a stick figure wearing a striped shirt and painting of a surreal masterpiece. And then Matador Juan Belmont, who's just drawing him being attacked by a raging bull, not Robert De Niro, but a raging bull. Yeah. And then the thought bubble above his head thinking, uh-oh. And then lastly, in his book is Stalin, which is actually an accurate detailed portrait drawing of the funny man himself.
Good old Joe.
Yeah, Stalin. He was a stand-up, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so Monty remarks that Stalin could really put pressure on you. And the nearby Kent Brockman is looking at his phone when he is greeted by an old acquaintance.
Hello, Kent.
Well, well, well. Rachel Maddow. Everyone came back for Chip's funeral.
I was flying from D.C. to New York, and of course I had the layover in Springfield. How's the gang at Channel 6?
Look, let's get this out of the way. Just because we both worked at Channel 6 and you made it big and I didn't doesn't mean I'm bitter.
Is that your car?
Maybe.
Kent, I'm going to tell you the most important mistake you ever made after this break. So, Kent, that mistake you made, that fundamental life-changing error, that cosmic fail, that...
Just tell me already.
After this break. You could have come with me, but you were suckling the dual teats of infotainment and celebrifawning. So, tell us about your new movie.
It's fantastic. The studio let us play in their sandbox.
Great, we have a clip.
No, no, don't show it. There aren't 5 good seconds in the whole film. I'm not a newsman anymore. I'm a geologist. I keep discovering a new rock bottom.
All right, so welcome to the show, Rachel Maddow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she made the funny joke of the layover between New York and D.C., yeah. Which is, it's not too far. It's like a 4-hour car drive. Mass transit is like about 3 hours, like a bus or train. And according to Google, it's a 4-day walk or a 21-hour bike ride.
Oh.
So, you know, she gave a hint to where Springfield's at, guys. Springfield's probably either in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware. So I think that's maybe that's where the Simpsons live.
Alrighty. Somewhere in that 206-mile gap. It's funny because it is an hour and 20-minute flight, so it sucks that there'd be a layover. But speaking of Rachel Maddow, her promising to give details after the break and then walking away and like coming up next. I don't know if you've ever seen Rachel Maddow's show, but it's a lot of that. I think that she's a very talented journalist and she like speaks very plainly and directly in a very intelligent way. But the baiting and the we'll find out, but we're going to talk some more and I'm going to drag this on for time. She's really good at that. So good self joke.
But that's, yeah, but isn't that all like news too?
It is, yeah. Like, we've got this one big smoking bomb. We'll tell you about it after we talk about cotton candy.
This is a product that is probably in your household is going to kill you. And we'll talk about that after an all new America's Funniest Home Videos. You know, I was talking about how young Monty looked like Jeremy Allen White. I'm thinking a young Brockman looks kind of like a younger, well, maybe like mid-2000s Alec Baldwin.
Ooh,
like Alec Baldwin on 30 Rock.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. They should do a thing with him and like Lisa could be Liz Lemon.
Tina Fey.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking who else could be who, but Carl as Tracy Morgan.
God, I haven't watched 30 Rock in a few years. It might be time for a rewatch.
It holds up. A lot of people online have mentioned how Tina Fey has a tendency to make a lot of jokes about Asian people, and she kind of does. And you don't know, like, they seem benign back then, and you didn't really notice it, but now it's kind of there. But it's the show basically still holds up, though. It's still very, very well written.
All right. Well, maybe we will not do a podcast about it.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea.
All right. Did you notice that in the Kent Brockman's car has your license plate? It's IH8 Life. Well, that's your license plate. Yeah. And then a bumper sticker that says, ask about my bitterness, and a bitter on board sign hanging in the back window. Good stuff there. All right. So at Luigi's, Rachel tells Kent that she found her ticket out of Springfield, or at least to a better Springfield. Luigi arrives at the table and tells the news hounds that he has a story for them. Mario's down the street found a rat in their pasta. And then Kent asks then what happened. And Luigi replies that it can happen whenever they want. So Kent asks if he can come with Rachel, even offering to share blazers. So as Rachel leads Kent to the big scoop, Luigi tells them at Mario's, the picture of Sinatra on the wall is signed by Frank Jr. The frame, of course, is hiding the word Jr.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that it's supposed to imply that Mario and Luigi are brothers? And that Luigi is a little salty about not getting the limelight. So he opened up a successful Italian restaurant. And then his brother, a former plumber, opened one too. But it's not as good because there's rats in there. Or there would be because Luigi is sabotaging him.
Instead of rats, he'll be putting like turtles down the pipes.
Mm-hmm. And like flying bullets and whatever the hell a Koopa
eyes
is.
On them and arms for some reason.
So Rachel Kent and a camera operator arrive on the scene where someone has been dumping tires in the forest. Uh-oh. Krusty, the clown, appears from the bushes in a purple suit holding a cigar. He explains that the tires are from his ill-fated Krusty town car, which would explode if people gripped the wheel too tightly. Kent thinks he has a big scoop, but Krusty has a different idea.
You're not telling no one. As the 4 p.m. clown, I have complete control of Channel 6's news division.
Local news is a joke. I'm going to cable.
Cable news, bah. People only want news at 6 p.m. from white guys on weekdays and black guys on weekends.
We'll see about that. Yes, we shall see. About that, things will be seen by us. Kent, you coming?
He ain't coming. This little piggy's afraid to leave his cushy Anchorman slop trough.
Could you phrase that a little more nicely?
Sorry, he isn't coming.
You'll regret this, Kent. When I have my own show, and you're stuck here tracking Santa's flight from the North Pole. Oh, look, he's over Greenland.
Don't worry, Piggy. You made the right choice. Yeah, it'll burn out in an hour or so.
So Krusty started the infamous Springfield Terror Fire.
It's canon.
Yeah. That seems as reasonable of an explanation as anything else, so I'm not really upset by it. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's canon, Steve. All those tires, just like Nick Cannon and his kids. It's the same amount. The tires to Nick Cannon kids. Okay,
that's right. Yeah.
Is that where, when we say it's canon now, it's like if someone has a lot of kids?
Yeah, it's canon. Nick Cannon's dick, just always blasting cum. We could buy a condom or something.
Oh, he doesn't believe in that sort of thing.
Oh, that's right.
Anyways, we begin our second act, and it begins, as every second act on The Simpsons does, at the mansion of one C. Montgomery Burns, where Monty looks at his framed drawing of Lila. Did he have it enlarged, or did he just draw a new one? Or paint?
I want to say that he got it enlarged.
All right. And then we see a private eye arriving with dope on his sweetie. And she's still alive, and as last week, no longer mad at Mr. Burns. So Monty also learns that Lila is now a nun. And he asks if Jesus beats her. Then the coach replies that and Jesus is a real Eagle Scout. But Monty's penguin is not a Catholic. She's a Buddhist nun, spending her life expressing her sexuality with Zen Garden. Mm. So Mr. Burns imagines how those raked rocks could have been him. He then tells the detective to find the exit. And the dick there requests payment. But Monty pushes a button under his desk, causing the trap door to open on the floor that he's standing on. Yeah, Monty was on the trap the whole time, Steve, and shouting, who moved my desk?
So I know that, that gag of, the button under the desk, which opens the trap door, it's pretty classic.
Glacier Castle.
But I feel like the desk moved, or the moving company was here last week to clean the floors or whatever. I feel like that's been done a lot. And I feel like even at this time, that's a little tired, but maybe that's just me.
It's his trademark, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
He's pretty dumb to stand on his own trap.
Yeah.
Hosted by his own petard.
That's right.
Am I allowed to say petard?
I don't think so.
All right.
Kent Brockman then arrives in New York City, specifically in the cable news alley. He sees Fox News building, whose display reads, "Breaking news, dinosaurs died from overtaxation." We then see the billboard for MSNBC, which has a large text that says, "Fox started it." Next is CNN, which has a beaten down and dilapidated marquee that offers, "We'll trade news for food." The Fox News reader continues saying that they are the news that your grandpa watches. Kent Brockman wonders if Fox News is how he wants to break into the big leagues. He considers print journalism, asking a newsstand employee if he sells the New York Times. The man replies that he is the New York Times, which causes Kent to opt for Fox News. And it's funny because one of the things that when I went to New York recently, I really wanted to see a newsstand because, you see him in TV and you see him in movies, X3, you read all about it. Just that whole thing, like the opening to Siskel and Ebert, they both stopped by a newsstand. And there are newsstands all over New York City. They're everywhere, on every block. And they sell candy, chips, cigarettes, bottles of water. But the one thing that they don't sell is any sort of print media. No newspapers, no magazines. So it's kind of a letdown. It's basically like a tiny, tiny convenience store.
Oh, I love print.
I know.
Do you happen to see how much cigarettes were? I just want to know if you saw the prices in New York City. That's why I wanted to know.
$12.
Yeah, because I don't smoke, but I was at a gas station where you buy cigarettes.
Yeah.
But I was just looking over the counter at the cigarette prices, just like, I wonder how much are. And it was a pack of Marlboro cigarettes was $10. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
What an expensive hobby or habit.
Yeah, it's funny. As a former smoker, I don't want to be on any high horse or anything, but it's just a weird way to spend money and time.
Yeah, weed's cheaper. Smoke that.
Exactly.
I mean, if you're in a state more that for can. You.
Yeah.
Some of you aren't fortunate like us Pacific Northwesterners.
Yes, which is good. I like it.
A snooty PNWs.
Mm-hmm. Pot and weed.
We recycle, which, really doesn't do anything.
Oh, no. We sort our garbage to be dumped in the same landfill, probably. Yeah, I think PNW stands for pot and weed.
Pot and weed.
That's right.
All right, so back at 742 Evergreen Terrace, Bart sits in a basket that is being lifted by several balloons. As he's about to cut the rope and soar into the sky, Milhouse asks why he's doing it. And then Bart responds that's like 50% for attention and 50% to drop things on people. Math checks out. Bart then takes to the air, and Ralph comments that he's going to visit his sky granny.
So I assume that this is probably a parody of the Bubble Boy hoax, which happened like 4 years earlier in 2009.
What's the Balloon Boy hoax?
The Balloon Boy hoax was a news item that happened in 2009 where this boy was seen floating in the air by a balloon similar to how Bart is. And everybody thought it was some sort of like horrible parent that wasn't watching them or just some horrible thing. But it turned out it was all fake, that the kid and the parents were in on it.
Oh, so you're saying it was fake news, Steve?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Fake news. Speaking of, in the offices of Fox News, a kid's prospective employer tells him that all he has to do is operate this one device. Footage is shown of a Republican congressman from Alabama telling the media that at the time, he didn't know it was illegal to sex up a cow on the Capitol steps. The Fox employee then presents a remote, turning the Republican R into a Democratic D. Another press of the button, and the congressman is now from California rather than Alabama. A third push replaces his head with that of terrorist Osama bin Laden. Kent is offered the remote. As he looks down, several D's appear. He declines the offer, saying that he discovers that he has some scruples. He goes back to his little town where he can decide what news is, like a god.
Steve also has a remote that has a lot of little D's appear before him.
D's nuts.
All right. So meanwhile, Homer is walking with his bowling ball. Remember the good times they shared, such as
canoeing down a river together.
A bowling ball's first birthday.
Homer and bowling ball at a baseball game. Homer catching a foul ball for the bowling ball.
Homer and the bowling ball riding a roller coaster and the ball falling while going upside down. And luckily, it lands right back into the seat.
That's right. And Homer and the ball at a swimming pool, sinking to the bottom. The lifeguard saves Homer, and Homer gives mouth-to-hole resuscitation to the ball.
That's a very strong lifeguard there.
It is. I mean, it's only a 12-pound ball, but still. You notice that those balls are like pretty normal looking, just black balls. Where did the fancy bowling pin with the skull on it go? And where does it say spare no one?
Maybe it got washed off.
Maybe you're right.
Yeah. All that fun. Had to clean it, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So Homer returns to Allie McBalls to get his balls polished, only to find the location will soon be an Apple store. So then he throws his ball at the glass in anger and it just bounces right back and hit him on the head. Very funny physical comedy. It's a ball-proof window, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Raphael offers to use Siri for a nearby hospital, but the phone mishears him saying, "I don't see any hops petals near you," and then deletes all his contact information. I know it's a funny joke, but that's kind of like how like Amazon Alexa gets annoyed. I'm like, "Hey, what's the temperature?" It's like, "It's 52 degrees. Also, do you want to know what the farming conditions are like in Indonesia right now?" It's like, what? No, I just want to know the weather.
It's weird. Like those social or those personal assistants, whatever you call them, I've never found any that much use for them other than being like, "Hey, set a timer." That's the only thing I use it for.
Like I opened a product, a food product, and I was like, it says like good till 45 days. I'm like, well, what the 45th day is. And I just like, "Hey Siri, what day is it 45 days from now?" And then it told me. I was like, okay, that's useful instead of me doing the math. Because I like to, I'm going to be labeling when things expire. So I know when to throw them out.
It's a good New Year's resolution.
Yeah. I didn't say it was a resolution. Yeah. It's just, I'm going to be doing it now. So I don't
That's good. In the skies over Springfield, Bart floats, trying to keep himself calm, telling himself that he won't die. Below him is the rich Texan family reunion, which for some reason doesn't take place in Texas. Texans of all stripes shoot their guns into the air, puncturing some of Bart's balloons. As Bart nears the ground, another boy lets go of a single red balloon as an act of kindness. The balloon joins the rest of Bart's, causing him to elevate yet again. He then flies over the Peak Inn, where Smithers impatiently waits outside. In the distant lodge, Mr. Burns and Lila reconnect.
Hey, I found a blunder.
Oh, do tell.
Yeah. If you watch the animation there, the little boy holding a red balloon, he's wearing a red shirt, and then it zooms into him. He's wearing a white shirt.
Whoa.
Boy, I really hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
Not since Nene has accidentally saying 99 red balloons in German has somebody made a mistake involving a red balloon.
Anyways, they probably just forgot to color in the shirt.
Probably.
All those poor Korean animators.
Mm-hmm.
Those poor children Korean animators, I must say.
They worked so hard that their bloodshot eyes couldn't tell what was red and what was white.
All right, Steve, we have a clip?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, Monty, I can't believe you found me after all these years. I've saved myself for you.
Well, then, I should disrobe at once.
Housekeeping, send up a Chinese dressing screen and one of Firestone's finest vulcanized prophylactics. Be right back. Smithers, which do I take first, the rhino horn or the tiger tongue?
I have my doubts about both, sir.
Bah! I'll just do it the old-fashioned way, with my pump. Just powdering my nose, darling. Smithers, run down to Sears Roebuck and get a 5/8 inch Phillips head bolt.
Do you need a vulcanized rubber from Firestone, Steve?
I do, now, because I got my old-timey penis pump.
I think the funniness of old-timey speak is great.
It's
Mr.
always
Burnser. Yeah.
It always delivers, I feel.
Mm-hmm. And I hope he delivers there to Lila.
Hey there, Lila. What are you doing? I don't know that song.
Yeah. Kent Brockman pulls up to his parking spot at Channel 6, ready to slowly dial at 5, 6, and 11. Just then, he hears Bart cry out, a child in danger with exciting visuals. And Kent feels that Bart's corpse could be his magic carpet ride. After calling for a cameraman, Kent quickly appears on TV with breaking news headline, Ice Cream Float. And once Monty finally gains his erection, he's in for a big surprise.
The movie Up has come horribly to life over Springfield. A local boy clings to life in a story that proves this reporter's relevance.
Like a rumba!
It's Bart!
Pray for a miracle, boy. God can hear you better from up there.
Dear Lord, please help me land safely. Or transform this basket into a flying killer robot that I control with my mind. Amen.
That's not a prayer.
My God says it is!
Ooh! I see you're ice cold with anticipation. Dead? Oh, Lila, even at the end, I waited too long. What if I give her the breath of life? Oh, boy. I guess one regret just leads to another.
You know, sir, maybe it would bring you peace to honor the one thing Lila ever asked of you.
Here you are, my good man. A little broth will cure your mental illness.
Sir, that's 5 minutes. You can stop thinking of other people now.
You know what? I think I'll give it another 5.
Aw, Mr. Burns became a good person for a moment. So as Monty stirs the pot of soup, young Lila appears in this broth, telling Monty how proud she is of him.
I like how just his face is in the...
So Monty dips his head in there and kisses the soup. And the next person in line says that he ain't eating that. Meanwhile, Marge asks Chief Wiggum what his plan of action is to save Bart. Clancy explains that he's a placed marksman on the roof to shoot balloons one by one, but frankly, the marksmen aren't very good. We then see one of the snipers accidentally get shot by another, and so the shooter cries out to Wiggum, saying it happened again.
I like how it's like, Chief, it happened again.
It happened again. I shot a guy.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Wiggum tells him to spread out, at least an arm's length apart. Marge continues to blame herself for Bart's actions, but Clancy offers some sage wisdom.
It's all my fault. I should never have listened to those Kiss albums when I was pregnant.
Marge, with all due respect, that's ridiculous. My Sarah listened to Mozart and Churchill speeches when she was pregnant with Ralphie, and he can't even open a refrigerator. Pushing, always pushing.
Really?
Oh, yeah, that kid's a mess.
Hey, only I get to criticize him, Lou. Kid's scared to flush. Thinks it's his brother.
Can we focus on my son up in the sky?
Oh, I've got a long shot idea, by which I mean firing a shot over a long distance. I'm joking. Yeah, you see, if we could fire an exactly 12.5-pound weight into the basket, it would lower the boy very gently to the ground.
Unfortunately, all our cannonballs were melted down to make a statue of Joe Paterno, which we changed to look like Eugene Levy. I think I just might have what you're looking for.
The line about Ralph, a kid scared to flush, thinks it's his brother, is really weird and gross to me.
That his poop is brother.
Yeah, like just the implications of there, like you're giving birth to your brother through your butthole and you're sad to lose him. I don't know. Maybe I'm just overthinking. That's all.
Also that like parent tactic or response to if someone, if you comment on your child or whatever, your loved one, like, I hate it when they do this. And then you agree with them, you're like, you can't say that about my kid or, it's like, but you just did. And I'm just trying to sympathize or empathize with you.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I call your kid a piece of shit.
I mean, you called him a piece of shit 2 minutes ago, but sure, it's fine.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, if you're ragging on someone and then you defend them, I guess that means you love them.
Yeah, that's very sweet.
I like how Springfield made a Joe Paterno statue.
Yeah.
And so I had to say it's Eugene Levy.
Mm-hmm.
But did they make the Paterno statue after they found out about his crimes?
Unless they're, in fact, in Pennsylvania.
Here we go. You're right.
Yeah.
We solved it. So,
yeah.
So, Cresty started the tire fire and the Simpsons are in Pennsylvania. Well, there you go, everyone.
Yeah.
Don't need to watch Simpsons anymore.
We figured it out. So Homer offers his bowling ball, saying that today he is glad he sold his Apple stock. Lou looks on his iPad and sees that Apple closed up another 20 points. Homer wonders how everyone knows about Apple stock. And Lou responds that it's their terrific products that keep track of it for you and everything else that you can think of. He then uses his tablet's arc calculator to aim the cannon. Wiggum's not going to let Bart die on his watch, which luckily ends right at that moment. The cannon fires and lands right in the basket, narrowly missing Bart. As he floats to the ground, the townsfolk all chant, "Bart, Bart, Bart."
So then Marge hugs Bart and Homer grabs his bowling ball and hands it to his son. He then grabs the newly empty basket, which causes him to float. Wow, those balloons are really powerful with air. Like,
yeah.
Helium, like even lifting Homer's fat ass. Anyways, Letty remarks that Homer is rising faster than Apple stock. And then the text on the bottom reads, "This is the last time we will kiss up to Apple. We're not even getting paid for this." Homer then falls to the ground and then puts Bart on his shoulders. And the crowd once again chants, "Bart, Bart, Bart." Lisa runs up to her family with a blue ribbon saying she's won the science fair. Again, the crowd chants, "Bart, Bart, Bart." Lisa then says she gets to go to Chicago. And once more, "Bart" is chanted three times. A defeated Lisa weakly says, "Bart, Bart, Bart." And then Marge explains what she has learned.
"You know what I think about regrets? As long as your family is together, every choice you've ever made is the right one."
"And together we are."
"Would you guys knock it off? He's down safe already."
"Sorry, Chief, that was me putting it down."
And there you have it, a family reunited. And a grateful nation gives thanks for some solid reporting. Back to you, Rachel Maddow.
Great job, Kent. I think we might have an opening for you at MSNBC between our weekend prison documentary block and the 2 hours it takes to make up Joe Scarborough on Monday morning.
No thanks, Rachel Maddow. I'm happy right here. No regrets.
Take that, Scarborough.
Yeah.
And your Scarborough affair.
Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. You're also a mediocre coffee partnership with Starbucks. Cup of Joe.
I don't get that one. Okay.
He had a line of coffee from Starbucks that was like Joe Scarborough branded Starbucks coffee. Yeah.
That's funny.
Called Cup of Joe.
I get it because you call coffee Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Cup of Jova.
Cup of Jova. Hot brown.
Why do we call it Hot Joe, like for a cup of coffee?
That's an excellent question that I feel like I should know the answer to.
Well, you know what? Maybe find that out and save it for next week, Steve.
Okay.
So credits rolling because there's white text. We get a post-credit scene. Also because of Marshall Wallace's death, we get a nice little tribute to the Mrs. Krabappel herself. Also, subsequent airings and outside the U.S., the original credits scene were shown, which is actually another dedication to another death, which, of course, was the opening with Chip Davis. And we see him in some famous Simpsons scenes, such as
Homer jumping Springfield Gorge with Chip as a paramedic.
Chip as the fifth and, well, I guess, technically the sixth member of the B-Sharps.
Chip playing harmonica for the Who.
Chip as a carny.
Chip peeking in the bushes as Marge and Homer stand in the Garden of Eden, bare-ass naked.
We got Chip fighting off a dolphin from that Treehouse of Horror segment from, we just reviewed that one, this last Treehouse, right?
Yeah, season 12, I believe.
Right.
Chip in the backyard with Joe Namath, once again, and Bart.
Chip on the island of Dr. Moreau from another Treehouse of Horror segment.
Chip sitting with the Flanderses as Bart's penis and the rest of his body smacking the glass at Krusty Burger from the Simpsons movie.
Chip with the Plow King Barney and Linda Ronstadt.
Chip with Bart's boy band The Party Posse.
Chip with Homer in outer space.
Chip with Homer and Bart at the Gay Steel Mill.
Chip with the mall skeleton.
Chip with the ball of Springfieldians looking to win a Guinness Book of World Records.
Chip and Homer with their heads stuck in a bridge.
Chip with teenage Lenny, Carl, and Homer.
Chip with the cannon that shoots Homer at Hubbabalooza.
Chip delivering Lisa at the hospital.
Chip with Luscious Sweet watching Dedrick Tatum.
Chip with Kang and Kodos.
And finally, Chip with Pie Man and the Cupcake Kids. Wow.
Wow.
Well, that's a lot of chips, Steve.
Yeah.
And not enough like
Frito-Lay. Yeah.
Anyway, what a fun way to... Well, not a fun way. I mean, there was a real death and then they do the fake death.
Yeah.
Lots of death.
It's a weird and sad coincidence that they wrote that Chip Davis died.
Yeah.
And then a cast member dies. Mm. And this is like the second week in a row that we as a podcast have ended our episode with the death.
Well, let's hope next week we get the hat trick.
Fingers crossed.
All right, Steve. All this death talk is making me a little parched. I need to replenish my fluids, and then we'll come back and discuss the rest of the episode. How about that?
Sounds great.
We'll be right back. Alrighty, we're back. Let's wrap up this week's episode for Regrettings and a Funeral. We'll talk about some of our favorite scenes, favorite jokes, maybe give an MVJ. We'll give our final thoughts, and then we'll find out what we're watching next week. But before we do that, we'd like to give a little gift from this episode. Steve, I know you have a gift for us, right?
Yes, I have the gift of information.
Wait, what?
So one theory is that Josephus Daniels, the Secretary of the Navy during 1914, during World War One, banned alcohol in the Navy, and the only substitute was coffee. And so sailors sarcastically called it Cup of Josephus. And then that snarky nickname was shortened to Cup of Joe. However, some people predate that, the Cup of Joe being before World War One, or even Navy's ban on alcohol. And so it's actually considered to be possibly a lazy portmanteau of the words Java and Mocha, or Jamoke, which was commonly used as a slang for coffee. And Jamoke slowly turned to Joe. So there you go.
Oh, this was what we referenced before the break, what Cup of Joe means.
Yeah, there's the origins of Cup of Joe.
Oh, well, I meant a gift from this episode that, you know, there's a product or something in there that you can give me as a physical item. I don't need information about coffee. Why? You just don't understand gift giving, do you?
Fine. I'll give you something that you'd really enjoy. I'll give you a copy of...
No. No, you're getting Magnificent Bastard and the Lives...
No, I was going to do that.
No, you're getting it.
I was going to give you a mid-1996 edition of Kiss's album, Destroyer.
Which I'll probably do what it says.
Destroyer.
Yeah, fine, I'll give you the audiobook of Molman's, read by, I don't know, let's say Mo.
Hans Molman was a great man. Yeah, I like it. Thank you, Craig.
So we both gave each other books. How boring are we?
Well, I can also give you infant CPR if you want.
I mean, my nose isn't that big, but if you want me to stand or
no, I know
hold
the
you
perfect...
on shoulders. And...
Yeah, I know the perfect thing to get you. I'll get you the old-timey penis pump that Mr. Burns has.
Oh, thank you. I already have like two of those.
Okay.
How about a statue of Eugene Levy?
That's what everybody loves. He's an icon.
You know. This episode was pre-Schitt's Creek, so...
Mm-hmm.
Or was it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, okay. This episode is, what, 10 years old now?
Yeah.
Jesus. All right, Steve, what from this episode made you laugh, chuckle? Do you got an MVJ for us? What's the funnies?
Oh, boy. There's a lot in this episode. The marksman made me laugh a lot. I know it's silly and goofy, but that it happened again is a great line. And I think that the, of course, Bart and Milhouse's nose penis, that was... made me laugh out loud a lot. And even the crying bowling ball was probably, it was a fun joke. So, but if I had to give an MVJ, most valuable jokester, I'm going to say, I want to give it to Kent because I like his reading on a lot of things. And this regret will be continued, followed by a brand new bottle of scotch. That made me laugh. I like that. So Ken Brockman's my guy. What about you, Craig?
I think Kent Brockman is all of our guys. We love the Kent Brock.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think MVJ, I'm giving it to Eugene Levy.
Yeah, he is a very valuable jokester.
And Milhouse's nose. No, but I think my favorite scene is still the that scene I was talking about with Bart and Milhouse.
Mm-hmm.
As Bart's penis. It's very funny. Very blue collar, but very funny.
Yeah.
And then I think you said it too, the sniper scene, I think was really funny. So I'll give another MVJ to Springfield Snipers.
Keep up the good work, boys.
You know, we talked about there's a lot of death in this episode, but, you know, also Ralph's brother keeps dying.
Yeah.
He has to flush him down the toilet.
Sometimes two or three times a day.
Yeah. Oh, Ralph seems like a shit monster.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what do you really think about this episode, Steve? Give me a little review and a little ranking.
Sure,
if you want.
Yeah. I guess I'll do that. This is a very interesting episode. It feels really padded with the very long couch gag followed by, I guess in later showings, that very long end credit scene. But in the middle of that, there's still a lot happening. I mean, you got Bart's story. You've got Homer's story. You've got Marge worrying about listening to Kiss as a person. You got Kent and Rachel Maddow. Like, there's a lot going on in this episode, like four or five plots. And they're all pretty funny, but it's a little weird to me, the episode. Like, it's just structured very odd, and it feels like it's very trying very hard to have, like, big statements about culture and society, but I don't know exactly what they're saying. Like, the media jokes they're pretty on the nose, and I get those are funny, and, you know, taking life by its moment. But for some reason, this episode didn't quite hit perfectly for me. I think there's a lot of funny elements, but it felt kind of like a sketch show, just going from one thing to another, and it's having Chip Davis being the cohesive glue is a little off to me. So I'm going to say it's a soft skip for me. It's fine, and if it were, like, on the air, I don't know that I'd change the channel, but I don't know that I'd ever seek it out again. But I did like how they tied it all together in the end, so that's something. So I'm going to say that currently the Apple stock, as of this recording, is $130.15. So out of $130.15, I'm going to give this an 83.86. What do you think, Greg?
I'm going to maybe partially disagree with you.
Okay.
Remember clip shows? Remember back when, like, sitcoms, even like dramas too, they would do sitcoms. You know, back in the day, you would have like 26 to 30 episodes a year. And a lot of times, you know, the writers are burnt out, so they have to do a clip show, which is like, let's, you know, just have a little story and show old, you know, funny scenes or whatever from an episode. Kids to this day, they don't know what clip shows are, I don't think, because, you know, everything's like prestige television. There's only like 10 episodes a season. So there's not going to be a Mandalorian or a Wednesday or a Succession or a White Lotus. Am I hitting all like the popular shows, Steve?
Yeah, I think so.
There's not going to be an episode where Baby Yoda sitting around is like, remember that time you rescued me from the episode 2 weeks ago? You know?
Right.
So this episode felt like a clip show, but it's obviously all new. And I'm wondering if this was like in the writer's room, they're just like, they've had like a bunch of ideas. And like you said, this episode felt like a sketch show. And what if this was like, they had all these ideas for very funny scenes or funny gags, but they never could put those pieces of those puzzles to a cohesive, like, you know, family outing type story, or your typical, like, Lisa hates Homer, so Homer has to win her back type of story, or Marge is falling out of love with Homer, Homer has to win her back. You know, those basic Simpsons stories. So that's why I think I kind of like this episode, because you're watching a sketch show, like you just said. So I kind of enjoy that aspect. Like, there's just nothing makes sense in this episode. It's silly. Is there redeeming qualities of it? I laughed. And that's The Simpsons, right?
I guess at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
So I don't know if I would turn the TV off if this came on. Like, I would watch it. I think this is a very prominent episode in the sense that, like, yeah, you know, it's on in the background and watch this funny gag. It's not the best of episodes. It's not the worst. But I don't feel like I really hate it as much as you do. I mean, you were texting me, like, seething, like, comments, like, stuff I shouldn't repeat over this podcast, but a lot of these comments will probably get you canceled, so I'm not gonna say it. I'm protecting you, Steve.
I genuinely wanted to get fried chicken.
You also learned things from this episode, like never listen to Kiss albums.
Sure.
And I think that's a plus, right?
That is a good thing for everybody to learn, is don't listen to Kiss. Maybe I was a little harsh, and what you said is really giving me food for thought, and I regret my score. So I'm going to bump it up to...
You're at, like, at what, 63% right now?
Yeah, so if we're going percentages, I'm going to bump it up to a solid 82.
Oh, that's a little too high, I think.
All right.
I'm not here to sway your mind.
No,
I'm
no.
Just saying what I thought about the episode.
You are right. It was
keep
a lot
your
of fun.
Score.
I do have my issues with the episode, but I do think it was a lot of fun. And there were some solid funny parts, but I do think it was maybe kind of a clearinghouse episode with a lot of ideas that weren't fully fleshed out. But I think that, you know, to utilize them is kind of fun.
Also, if this is the clearing out episode, this is only the third episode from the 25th season. It's like, yeah, we got no idea. But it's probably holdover, right? Because what's the nerd code? RABF18. So that was probably the nerd code for season 24.
Right. So you're probably right. It probably was.
It's
originally...
18. Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, I got to rank it too, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about Caesar band Kiss in this. You know, they have 20 studio albums. They have 9 live albums. They got 14 compilation albums. They got 60 singles. They got 8 box set albums. They got four 78 solo albums, and then they have three Insta Live albums. I don't know what those last two things mean, but that's a total of 118. And so out of 118, I'll give this episode 69.
Nice.
I think this is a episode that's, it's either hit or miss, but I think taste-wise, I think OG Simpsons fans probably won't like it, and I get it, but for me and like us just doing this podcast, well, after like 206 episodes we've reviewed, this is, yeah, perfectly fine. Like I said, perfectly cromulent, as the Simpsons would say. So I wasn't like annoyed by this episode, even though we are annoyed grunt boys.
That's right.
All right, Steve. Well, should we find out if we're going to be annoyed next week?
Yes, and to do that, we're going to need that good old entity that owns us and controls us, the Wheel of Random. Let's give it a spin to see which season we're in. Boop.
All right, Steve, we're going to season 11.
Oh boy, season 11. That's fun. Let's give it another spin to see which season, which episode in that season we're going to watch. Let's give it a spin now. Boop.
All right, we got episode 10.
Season 11, episode 10.
All right, no looking up, Steve, because you have to give me the title first. What do you think that episode's called?
It's so hard to think back to what was from season 11 and what we haven't already reviewed. So I'm going to guess that it is, season 11 is probably around 2000. So I'm going to guess that it's called Getting Jiggy with the Millennium.
You're wrong.
No.
Yeah. But I would, you know, maybe watch that episode. It's actually called Little Big Mom. Little Big Mom.
Okay. I know that we have this bit, but I'm excited for this episode.
Oh, so you actually know it.
I do know which episode this is. And to me, it's a very thought-provoking episode. I don't mean emotionally. I just think it's an interesting episode. And I have feelings for it. So
well, what's feelings it about?
It's about 22 minutes.
There you go.
Thank you. I don't deserve that.
No. But so, just give me a synopsis real quick, Steve, for our listeners, what you think it's about, or even though you know.
I'm going to guess that the family goes skiing and Marge gets injured and Lisa has to be the mom of the household.
But what's the B story?
Oh, Milhouse gets a tattoo that is accidentally racist.
I think that B story is wrong. So,
crap.
Yeah. I don't know. But here from the International Movie Database, it says Lisa finds out how rough Marge has it when her mom is in traction and she becomes the woman of the house. Homer and Bart's antics get her so worked up, she conspires to teach them a lesson. So, yeah, ooh. I think that's the one you said. Yeah. Is this the one where they go to a leper colony in Hawaii?
Yeah.
Okay, I remember this one now. I guess we'll save our thoughts until next week, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey. It's fun going back into the past. The episode originally aired January 9th, 2000. So, yeah, we were young lads then, Steve. This episode is 23 years old. Wow. If it aired January 9th, spoiler alerts for this air date or this record, it's also January 9th.
Weird.
2023. So, yeah, there you go. All right, Steve. 23 years ago, this episode aired. All right. Well, hey, that was fun. Check out that episode that we just watched, Four Regrettings and a Funeral. If it's not your cup of tea, we understand. And you know what? If it's not, let us know on social media. You can go to like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at 138Simpsons.
And you can always email us at 138Simpsons@gmail.com. And hey, if you're so kind, go to your favorite podcatching app, leave us 5 stars or the equivalent, and leave a review. But you don't need to write a real review. You can just describe your drawing of a pretty lady.
And if you don't want to type all that stuff, just let us know via voicemail. You could do that easily by going to anchor.fm/138Simpsons or to the scroll through the show's notes on the app you're looking at. And there's a little button at the bottom that says leave a voicemail. We'd love to hear from you. Leave a voicemail. We'll play it on the air. And if you want some merch, you can go to tpublic.com/user/annoyedgruntboys for a shirt or maybe a pillow or a tapestry.
There you go.
All right. For this week, I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Craig.
And I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Steve.
And remember, I've overstayed my welcome for 40 years.
Technology's a fad. Big blue balls are the future.
At the time, I didn't know it was illegal to sex up a cow on the Capitol steps.